Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungry here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. My name is Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred, who, shockingly, is quieter than my dogs right now. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to get caught up. You know, we haven't done a show in, 2 weeks now because we're super on top of it. Just trying to make sure I've got everything that's going on with AEW. It is a very busy time for them right now. And I think it's important that we do talk a little bit about Forbidden Door. I don't see much point in doing like the full pay-per-view review because lack of timeliness there. I thought overall it was a pretty good show. Not one of their best, but pretty good. But I want to talk about two matches in particular with you, and then we'll kind of segue from that to another subject. But first, I want to talk about the finish to Hangman Page and MJF, which has gotten a lot of discussion online. The long and short version of it is that we got all the MJF bullshit going down the home stretch, including some interesting referee work / booking. So basically, we had MJF get a pinfall on Page with Page having his foot on the rope, and Bryce did not see it. And he also made that he basically was immediately shot by a sniper somewhere after making the pinfall because he had been earlier accidentally hit by a Hangman buckshot. And so MJF celebrates, and then Bryce is too dead to call for the bell. Mark Briscoe marches out, and I don't know if he was supposed to bring a ref or yell at Bryce or something, but he just kind of comes out, and it's not really clear what effect he actually had on the match on camera, but this led to Bryce not only reviving and restarting the match because he was told that Paige's foot was on the rope, but they then had him actually grab MJF's hand to prevent him from punching Page with the ring, if I recall correctly, and get into a shoving match with MJF. This is minutes after he apparently died. Right after, like, his last breath was to make the three count for MJF, and apparently it looked like his soul left his body. Had all the muscle strength of someone after getting hit with Shang Tsung's finisher in Mortal Kombat 2. He got better, and Hangman basically smacked him in the face with the pseudo briefcase, hit the buckshot and all that, got the pin. I thought it was a pretty good match up to that point. But that finish was they made it like a Rube Goldberg machine. They just had way too many moving parts on it, and I thought it was kind of insane.
But yeah,
they lost me there.
I think this match is the summation of the two AEWs, pre-CM Punk firing and post-CM Punk firing, where you wouldn't have had this in the world of CM Punk's AEW. And this isn't a CM Punk thing per se. It's more about talking about timelines. You would have not seen this before he ended up getting fired after All In London. You wouldn't have seen it. And you're seeing it now. MJF is the champion. And it's just a bunch of hokey bullshit. But before the hokey bullshit started, it was great. It was fantastic. It was trending to potentially be a 5-star match. And now, Fred, we're talking about horseshit. We're talking about the referees making themselves look like idiots. Why can't we just have really good wrestling? Why? What is preventing us from having really good wrestling? Like, just do that. Don't listen to MJF's creative, which, honestly, if he had a filter, then a lot of this would be fixed. But Tony Khan doesn't tell him no. I remember, and obviously you have to take him with the documentary because it's the WWE documentaries on the Monday Night Wars. But I remember them talking about Vince Russo, where once he didn't have Vince to filter his ideas anymore, everything just came out and a lot of it was bad. There was some good stuff. And I think people forget that because the amount of bad and how egregiously bad it was just overshined everything. He needs a filter. And if he had a filter, I bet we'd have great MJF because he was a huge part of some of his best works, which was the dog collar match with CM Punk, the Cody stuff, the Bryan Danielson Iron Man match. It takes two to tango. We can credit the other players in those matches more if we want, but MJF was a big part of the success of all of that. There's greatness within MJF. We've seen it, and we've seen it consistently. The problem is he needs a filter. Like you have on YouTube with the child blocks where they're only going to show like stuff like Miss Rachel and Bluey. You need that for MJF. Is that a problem? Yes, it's a major problem. And why I understand people in this business do not like MJF anymore and just want him gone. But there's still so much good. This dude still loves territory wrestling, and we can get him back to a great spot. But Tony Khan needs to step up and have a set of balls and start telling him no. That's how we get there. And I don't know if we're ever going to get to that point because we're 6 years into this promotion, and he hasn't been willing to show that as of yet. It's frustrating because MJF is an all-timer, potentially. And he's being wasted because his stupid, corny 1990s WWE bullshit keeps coming to the forefront. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you get down to it, though, this is Tony Khan's problem because he's the, you know, the buck stops with him and all this.
100% it's Tony Khan's problem.
And he is the one that needs to be blamed 100%. It's very frustrating. Now,
Hold on. I want to clarify this. MJF still deserves blame for how shitty these are.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But you're right. Tony Khan, everything, the buck stops with him. If you're letting these shitty ideas get through, and look, every booker is going to have bad ideas that go through because you want to try something, you want to let people be creative because eventually, like procedurally, that will end up being in a positive for your promotion. But enough's enough.
Yeah, it is very frustrating with MJF. One underrated part of this is I think that, I'm not going to blame him for the creative aspect, but how it was carried out, I think Bryce Remsburg had an all-time bad performance. Frankly, just like you lay it out on paper and then like they give it to Bryce, and it's just so over the top the way he approached doing this that it is absurd, frankly. That just was really funny, but not in the good way. I mean, like, it's down to Tony Khan to stop MJF from going full-blown silly. And this is all very ridiculous. I think that it is the worst part of MJF, is these peccadilloes, if you will, preferences, whatever you want to call it, tendencies to way overcomplicate everything for the, you know, for the purpose of getting heat, brother. And that don't always work out great. I think you can look at New Japan right now and see that just constantly pursuing heat isn't inherently the best idea or best way to approach booking, because they are 100% a company built around building heat, but without any apparent payoff for it. And, you know, I think that, I just thought this was way too overdone of a finish. And I think it really ruined what was otherwise what I thought was a very good match, and very frustrating to watch and see that happen. And I just don't think there's going to be a solution to it. I hate to say that it'd be better for everyone if MJF just went to WWE, because I think it would hurt AEW meaningfully. But at the same time, if this is what he wants to do, then maybe it would be better for everyone. I don't know.
Tell him no. That's all we're asking. Tell him no.
I don't see it happening anytime soon, unfortunately. And that's the crappy part. But
I agree with you. It's getting ridiculous. Just tell him now, no.
I do think it's very interesting that immediately after the show, Tony Khan announced that he wasn't going to allow cash-ins anymore with the, you know, the contract gimmick, which of course I think is what everyone wanted in the first place, is to not have this dollar store, you know, money in the bank stuff going on. But I don't know, man. Like, was that him just like realizing the creative did not work? Was that him, you know, his version of Vince McMahon back in the day telling Kevin Owens his match sucked as he came back through the curtain? Like, you know, I don't know. Regardless of what it is, it's a problem that has been needing addressed for a while. MJF is too talented of a guy to just have him muck up every segment he's in with, you know, way overdone drama, way overdone booking. But that's where we are with it, and that's not tenable. So they really gotta get this taken care of. But I'm worried that we're just not gonna see that resolved in a good fashion before, you know, the heat death of the universe.
Yeah, if they can figure it out with MJF, like, he's a star. He's already proven that he can draw like a star. And he's put out performances that show he's a star. So we should be focusing on trying to get him in the best place to succeed. And right now, that's not what he's doing. It's wild to me. And I remember talking to Joe Lanza on the NFL Intelligentsia, which you should go listen on voicewrestling.com/Patreon. He was talking about how being an NFL GM, like, we could do it. And he related to how Joe would always say, I can play Olympic level handball with enough practice. I'm like, no, it would be like you get in the book to AEW because you think you can do it and you got all these good ideas. But once you get in the seat, it's a little bit different. Yeah. And I'm wondering if now that Tony's been in the seat for so long, I'm not going to say he doesn't have good creative and a good fastball anymore, but Gato lost it. Everybody loses it at some point.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if him not telling people no is kind of him trying to preserve him from losing that fastball, if you know what I mean. Like,
wait, you know what my theory is? Is once we hit like preseason NFL, it's over. You know, it's Tony is not thinking about the big pick. It is not forefront of mind for him to work on AEW stuff.
Yeah,
and I think that's my primary concern. Is I just worry that he's a very distracted person with everything else he tries to do, and he's not relying on enough people, or else he's not relying on the right people. And, you know, that just is a problem. And the creative of this company, you know, is, I think in general, is pretty good. But I do think it is missing. Everything feels competent, but not hot. And I think that's kind of my takeaway of Adam Page after winning the title. Is that I think that it was the right decision, but I also don't think anything's really caught on at a high level in the aftermath of that. And this is a company that, you know, could really use an uptick in business outside of pay-per-views. You know, we'll get to a TV rating discussion later. Their TV ratings are fine. Their ticket sales are, you know, difficult, we'll say. And, you know, that's got to be front of mind for Tony here, is getting all that resolved. But I don't know, man. It's kind of concerning to me that maybe this is, I don't know what it'll take for this company, honestly, to really step up their quality and to get some of that, you know, get it the level of investment in it that I think it needs to really feel like a major company. I just don't know if we're going to see that anytime soon. And I do.
Well, I can tell you one thing that'll help: Bryan Danielson on commentary.
Yeah, he is going to start on. He's going to be on every Dynamite starting this Wednesday. I think he did a fantastic job on that, on the pay-per-view on Forbidden Door. And I think that his addition is going to be fantastic for the quality of commentary. I've long been a proponent of having a rotating seat. And, you know, this is, cause I think that fresher voices, you know, it's Taz. I enjoy Taz. He's a good commentator, and I've seen some people maybe knock his level of investment. I don't think that's a problem yet, but I do think it'd be good to have Taz every 3 weeks, you know, and that's not like a knock on him. It's just, I think it would be better for the company to vary the voices a little bit. But I do think that Bryan Danielson is fantastic, and I would want him on commentary as much as possible.
No, I agree. So
the other match I wanted to talk about, or at least the aftermath, was the main event, the unsanctioned cage match, legally distinct from War Games, what's their name for War Games, which this almost but not wasn't, because it was just the one ring,
Blood and Guts.
Yeah, Blood and Guts. Yeah, this not quite Blood and Guts. I thought it was a very good match, excellent, but not like a match of the year contender or anything. But this was the way that they wrote off Will Ospreay, who is dealing with health issues and is going to have neck surgery. And I think that obviously he needs to get it taken care of. But I also think that this could be a very interesting, in a bad way, time period for AEW. You've got Kenny Omega out right now with his health and so on and so forth. You've also have Swerve Strickland going to miss time with a knee surgery. And of course, Will Ospreay. That's three main eventers all out at the same time. And I think that that is, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, this is definitely going to be the cause lasting damage to the company or anything, but it's not what you want to see if you're a AEW fan. It's obviously much better when all those people are around. So I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting time, but I think one topic that came up a lot is, you know, with regards to the pushing or not pushing Will Ospreay to the world title scene. Do you think that was a mistake in hindsight? Because what they did instead was essentially make Swerve Strickland a main eventer. I think he definitely was a success in that sense. And you can definitely add him to the list of homegrown stars, but you know, that came essentially at the expense of having Will Ospreay be a world champion. I think we really had the choice at one point of either him or Swerve, and they went with Swerve. So do you think that was a mistake? Do you think that's going to be something that will, you know, really hurt AEW down the line? What are your thoughts on that?
This is a really weird one, Fred, because I don't think either was a mistake, but I think both of them were a mistake. And it's really tough to parse out as my dogs decide they want to play during this recording. Hey, quiet. Because Will made Swerve a guy. And now you have a bona fide star to help your company, even if Ospreay is healthy. On top of that, the decision to go with Hangman Page was the right one. It's what the fans wanted, and at the end of the day, they're the ones buying tickets. So you do have to make your fans happy.
No, yeah. So hopefully they'll be buying more tickets.
That's the idea. It's just fascinating to me, the discussion, because no matter what way you take it, you're right. You should have capitalized on Ospreay. You should have made him the guy. Odie, stop. But you can't say it was a bad idea to elevate Swerve because it worked. So no matter what, you can talk yourself into the right or wrong answer, because both sides of the coin give you a good outcome, but it gives you a negative at the same time. Because if Ospreay just beats Swerve, Swerve may never be a guy because the fan base may never take him seriously because he was kind of a comic book villain. It's such an interesting conversation. I'm going to mute now because my dogs are going batshit.
Awesome. I'm of the opinion that they did. It's a tough one to me because I think Swerve was already well on his way to really being a main eventer. I don't think that it was, not that you're saying this, but I think there was more to it than the win over Ospreay that really got him there. But that obviously didn't hurt. I just think that I think that there's maybe a little regret from some fans about possibly not utilizing Ospreay to the most of his abilities. And I think that it's maybe a little too soon to presume that when he comes back, he's going to be greatly diminished. I feel like that's kind of an underlying assumption when it comes to his absence. And I don't know. I'm always a little conservative when it comes to this stuff. And I'd like to see him in the ring first before we all, you know, freak out about it, because there's been plenty of guys that have had neck injuries and come back and been fantastic performers. It's a question of how he's going to be long-term, of course. And I don't think you can see that till he comes back. So
the problem is, Fred, we don't even know what the neck injury is and what the surgery is going to entail. Is he getting a full-blown fusion? Is he just getting a cleanup procedure? Is he getting one of those Kurt Angle experimental procedures so he can come back in 2 months?
Well, we don't fucking know. Hope not to that last one.
That's the problem. We don't know. And because we don't know, that's a bigger problem than knowing, because it leaves this layer of uncertainty clouding the entire situation. If we knew, we would be able to have a better answer, but we don't.
Yeah, and you know, neck injuries aren't great. But I think we had the whole discussion about where Will discussed possibly changing his style, and I think it just kind of snowballed from there. We'll see. Obviously, you know, we won't know till we know, and there's a lot of time until then, but, you know, fingers crossed. Obviously, we're hoping the best for Will after the surgery and with his recovery from it and everything, but there's a lot of time left on, you know, on the road between now and then. So I don't think people should be panicking, but I think it's viable to, you know, have that in the back of your head. I don't think that the Swerve decision was a bad one. I do think that they probably should have at some point in this pre-injury run strapped up Ospreay, found a way to do it, but we all know how Tony Khan is. Once he's decided on a booking path, he sticks to it, to sometimes to the detriment of the company. And I don't know, I can't say that there was ever like a truly bad idea when it came to putting Guy over, but I do, at the same time, I do think that maybe we waited a little too long on Will. That does bring me to, you know, since we're talking about pay-per-view, I think the big business story the past couple weeks is that AEW is putting their pay-per-views up for sale on HBO Max. They're going to sell them at $40 a show, which is $10 less than other platforms. Of course, you have to pay for the, you know, the Max service, which is, I think, at its cheapest $10. Or, I'm sorry, yeah, $10 a month, so that kind of cancels itself out. This felt like it was a long time coming, and I'm frankly not terribly surprised that it finally happened. It just surprises me a little bit that it took this long, if that makes sense. And I thought, I just did not expect this to be a this long of a stretch before they got to the, you know, to this point in the relationship, you know, given how much Tony Khan puts on that, you know, WBD / Max / etc. Relationship. But, you know, here we are. What any thoughts from you on this story? You're on mute, buddy.
Damn, I hit the unmute button. I don't know what happened. Anyways, it's a really interesting idea. And when we initially talked about this, I thought the price was going to be $30 because it would be a super worthwhile investment for those to sign up for HBO Max and then buy the pay-per-view. But they went with the idea of these people are already watching AEW on Max. So they're getting an added discount versus trying to use this to get people to sign up for Max. I think that's a strategy likely rooted in the fact that they don't want to upset their other pay-per-view providers by undercutting them a significant amount, where if you have HBO Max, you're going to be spending at least $50 on this pay-per-view. Sorry, if you don't have HBO Max, you're going to be spending at least $50, which is the same price as all these other providers. So my guess is that's the smart way of doing business. And all $40 gets to stay in-house with Warner Brothers Discovery and AEW. However they choose to do that split, whatever that ends up looking like. So I think it's a really interesting idea. And I do think that it's objectively good for the consumer because the last numbers I saw were probably about a year ago, but HBO Max had something like 60 million subscribers. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're opening this avenue to all these other subscribers, and we've got news that TNT Sports is going off of HBO Max. Well, thanks to a good friend of the show, BJ Bethel, AEW is not a part of TNT Sports, even though they're viewed by the company as a sports property. They're going to stay on Max through 2027. I think it's good for business that they're offering a discounted pay-per-view. I think optically, to those who aren't necessarily diving in like we do, they say, oh, well, you have to buy HBO Max in order to get the discount. If you already have HBO Max, you're getting a discount. That's the point. And to me, I think that's a really smart way of doing business where, like, one thing that's always driven me nuts about cell phone companies, everybody for years would only get the best deals if you joined T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T. But their own customers would not. That has recently changed. But to me, that was always the biggest problem. You're only trying to keep or get new business. You're not trying to keep the business you have. And I think this strategy is it will eventually entice people to come over to HBO Max because you get all of this great television and movies with the streaming platform. But now to buy something you're already going to, you get a discount. I think that's a really good way to do business. I'm a big fan of it. And the more I think about it, I think the better I believe the strategy is because you're rewarding people who are already investing in your product and give, and it's not a deterrent for people to start investing because if they get HBO Max and then the pay-per-view, they're spending the same price as the pay-per-view. I think it's a huge win.
My concern isn't really so much with this deal as it is kind of an overarching thing with AEW. I worry that they're putting too much stock in loyalty and that it's going to come back and bite them in the ass. This is something that Joe Lanza talked about on, I think it was two flagships ago now, at some point. He talked about how, you know, WWE is spreading their content around all these different platforms, making connections, you know, building relationships, so on and so forth. And AEW is ride or die, apparently, with Warner Brothers to the point that they turned down another TV deal for Ring of Honor, in part because it was outside of the Warner Brothers Discovery ecosystem.
Now, I want to push back a little bit on that, Fred. Though one variable that we don't have that will provide important context is how good that TV deal was. Because if that TV deal was good, there's the one thing that I always remember is there's a price for everything. There would have been a price for Ring of Honor to go outside of the Warner Brothers Discovery family, but my belief is that price was very limited, very minimal. So it wasn't worth upsetting the relationship. But if they were to get a deal, let's say, equal to NXT's, $50 million a year, which, even though they don't consider developmental, it is a widely believed developmental product, NXT, that is. Ring of Honor, to this point, under Tony Khan, has essentially become a developmental product, slash, like, super show. And they do a lot of featuring of lucha talent and stuff when they have their big pay-per-view shows. But if you're getting a huge deal like that, I think Tony would have taken it. But I don't believe it was a good offer. Otherwise, he would have. And I believe by saying so publicly, it says, hey, we are open to other offers, but we do value the loyalty aspect. And once they get a good enough offer, I bet they take it. But the problem is, it's Ring of Honor, and now you make the point about this exclusivity relationship. That could end up biting them in the butt, especially with how WWE has cornered the wrestling market across multiple conglomerates, multiple broadcast partners, to a point where AEW doesn't have a lot of places to go.
Yeah, that's a big concern to me, I think.
So they actually might be smarter to continue this loyalty play because they don't have anywhere else to go. So it's kind of a catch-22 where you want to spread your net as wide as possible, but if you have nowhere to spread, you plant the seeds where you can. And that's with Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's kind of an interesting situation, and I think that it's fair to... I feel like it's more than fair to wonder aloud if there is a... if there's going to be some regret over this. They just can't really afford to paint themselves into a corner And I, you know, there is that persistent fear that maybe they already have done that by, you know, not developing enough contacts or enough distribution, I guess, is the term I'm looking for, outside of the pre-existing business structure. Yeah, I thought there's talk back with, remember Shockwave, when that was going to be a thing? That just went absolutely nowhere. And I'll kind of segue here. You know, we just had the rating for Dynamite last week. I managed to not put the actual number in front of me, but it was awful. I think it was actually their lowest ever. And that wasn't the only company in that situation. SmackDown, but SmackDown had the same very low number. Everything but NXT, I think, hit a historic low on TV last week. And I think, I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's just noise in the signal. But I think that this is, you know, there's been a, it's been an ongoing topic that basically how accurate are TV ratings these days, you know, with so much moving to streaming, you know, is Nielsen able to accurately cover things like YouTube TV, which, you know, is a service I use. It is a pretty popular service, compared with, you know, just traditional TV and even services like Netflix, which are very much a black box, I think, to anyone outside of that company. And we even, you know, Tony Khan himself has said that does not know how many, essentially, to really simplify it, he doesn't know how many people are watching AWTV on Max. And I think that is, not to just, you know, this is again something that Joe Lanza talked about, you know, previously, but I think that is terrifying if you are in Tony Khan's position. You have no idea, no guidance if what you're doing is working at all. And I think that that's got to be something that you got to yell and scream about getting access to, or anything, any kind of usable data from that. It's just a big part of it's a big issue really with TV these days, because, you know, TV services mostly get their money off of advertising, and advertisers want to pay for eyeballs, and they won't pay for eyeballs unless, you know, they can't pay for it reasonably if they don't know how many eyeballs they're getting. And that's just, you know, a huge problem for any company like AEW or WWE or anything like that, where you are, you know, where advertising dollars are a part of the equation. And if I was Tony Khan, I'd be losing my mind about, well, okay, I got to know if my booking is working. I got to know if I'm drawing people. And this is just a huge ongoing issue. And I don't know, man, I would not be able to just be like, oh, well, you know, we don't know. That's okay.
Yeah, it's the fact that Nielsen hasn't been able to update it this far along with streaming, to me, is a big red flag. So once you get this streaming element included, how confident are we going to be that it's going to be accurate? To me, if you haven't been able to implement it by now, why should I believe that it's going to work? Like,
that's a great question. I mean, I believe that it would take time, of course, to get something properly developed and implemented and everything. And this is a big thing that the NFL is pushing for. So you probably have some level of knowledge about this from the old shoot job, if you will. But it's called Nielsen is working on a new rating system called Big Data Plus Panel. And hopefully, they're hoping at least, I'm sure, this will completely change the game, and they'll be able to have better information for, you know, advertisers and for networks.
Yeah, so one of the reasons why they're doing this is the broadcast deals are coming up in 2028. The CBA is coming up in 2031.
For the NFL, to be clear.
Yes. I believe there's an out clause in 2027, but I am not 100% sure, and nor was I able to find it in my research. I vividly remember when this new CBA was announced that there was an out clause. I just can't tell you, like, for certain what it is and what it entails. But my brain remembers it categorically. Having more information will make those negotiations better. It will help the NFL get more money for their product. It will help. It will just help advertisers. It'll help networks get more money from advertisers. The one aspect it screws is the advertisers, because they're just going to have to pay more money. But that's fine. I think this is going to be good for understanding the television business, but it's going to be awful for social media discussion, which,
oh god,
zero context. The bozos like Raj Geary, who are just going to spout out numbers without understanding anything that goes behind it, is going to be worse. I want everybody to be prepared for that.
I don't know if it really could be worse, frankly. I just think it's just going to be the same level of an Ouroboros of just talking out of your ass.
Fred, we live in the United States of America. We survived a global pandemic. The one thing that we should know better than anybody, it can always get worse.
Fair enough. But that's a big developing story. Of course, we have Meltzer with his projections of, like, I can't recall offhand. Is it like half of the viewership of AEW is actually, according to him, and what he's been able to or attempted to piece together, is watching on Max versus, you know, on actual cable? Is that like what he came up with?
Yes. Approximately half of the viewership is. And I believe that also came from BJ Bethel. And
which is crazy to think about. I, you know, it's such a high number that I have a hard time. I'm not knocking Dave or BJ. I'm sure that they did their work, and, you know, I don't think either is really in the business of making stuff up on the regular.
Well, let's look at it from this perspective, Fred. About 33% of the companies or country, one third has access to TBS. One third of the country has access to TBS. Okay. So when you look at that number, theoretically, a significant portion, like, and just when you look at the number of subscribers on Max, around 70 million. And if you have the opportunity while I talk, if you could try and find the current number, I just remember around 70 million last I saw. So of those 70 million, if you had 700,000 views, that's 1%. That does not feel like a crazy amount, having 1% of your subscribers watching All Elite Wrestling's Dynamite. Now, is that realistic? I think we can have a different discussion. I also think for somebody like me, who with work, I used to get Fubo for free. So we didn't buy cable. We didn't buy Hulu or YouTube TV. We got Fubo. Fubo doesn't have the Turner networks. So I had to find other ways to watch. I got a login from my parents to watch on the TBS app, and I almost always watched it on delay. My number wasn't going to count. So how many people were like me that did not have access to TBS, that found ways to watch that don't count in the Nielsen rating? And then once it came on HBO Max at the beginning of 2025, how many of those people started to be counted? I know it's a large number, but what is that large number, Fred? How large is it? Is a large number going to be 20,000? Is it going to be 500,000? Is it going to be a million or anywhere in between? But there is a significant amount of people watching Dynamite every single week that were not calculated. So once we start to get those calculations, how are those numbers going to change? What is our perception going to be of those numbers? And how will it help us determine how successful this promotion is going to be? Because I'll tell you this. If you have 1.2 million, let's use that number, 1.2 million people watching Dynamite every week, why are your ticket sales bad when the price point is good? That, like, that in itself is, to me, the biggest factor of the success of this company, because I believe it to be this. You could sell out 30,000 tickets for All In. Why? It's being billed as the biggest show of the year. And AEW constantly delivers on pay-per-views. You know what's been real inconsistent? Television. So why in the world? And the last time they came to Minnesota, I didn't go. Because it's an inconsistent TV product. And quite frankly, I didn't want to drive an hour to get there because I would have to deal with rush hour traffic going through Minneapolis and St. Paul. And then have to drive the 50 minutes home. I did not want to do that. So I didn't go. How many more people are like that? Where because you're giving an inconsistent product, they're not willing to make that track. I know Rich has talked about it on the flagship quite a bit. To go to a Dynamite is a pain in the ass for him because it takes him like an hour, hour and a half to get to Wintrust where they usually run. At a certain point, you need to get consistency with your television product. And no matter how many people are watching on TV, that will fix your live attendance. And I think that aspect, once we get these big numbers, because they're going to be big. Are they going to be Raw and SmackDown big? I don't think so. But they're going to be bigger, significantly. And once we get that information, then we need to focus on how do we get people in the buildings. I mean, that's already a focus now. But from a media perspective, you can stop worrying about how many people are watching Dynamite every week because now you understand what that looks like with streaming. And I'll be real. It's going to be really interesting to have in-depth conversations with the people who can actually have those to try and figure out what to do next.
Yeah, so that's obviously a huge, huge portion of the discussion with AEW and its business going forward. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Honestly, we're all kind of flailing around in the dark when it comes to TV ratings these days, viewership, whatever you want to call it. And clarity will help, though. There is, of course, the fear that clarity will show that no one's actually watching AEW. But I think their numbers are going to be all right. Just a few random notes before we get to a quick look over the upcoming All Out card, or at least what we have so far. First of all, Wardlow, who has just returned, has already torn his pec, apparently. God knows how long he'll be out with that. It could be months and months. Rough go of it with Mr. Lowe, those injuries. Death Before Dishonor was a disaster on a technical level for the Ring of Honor brand. Just got so bad, they, you know, Tony Khan just threw his hands up and said, all right, we're just going to put this up on YouTube and refund everyone for, was it 1 month or was it multiple months, I think, for Honor Club subscribers. But I haven't got around to watching. Okay. I haven't got around to watching that show yet, but the talk is that basically almost everyone thinks Bandido versus Hechicero was a match of the year contender. So really need to get on that. You mentioned this earlier, but Bryan Danielson on commentary for Dynamite full-time starting Wednesday. Fantastic. MJF over the weekend got married to Alicia Tout. Congratulations to the happy couple. And I think the last thing I want to note is that they are teasing the debut of a character called Klon. I hope I'm getting that pronunciation correct, which will be basically evil hologram. Of course, hologram is used to be known as Aramis on the indies, and they are bringing in Ares, who for a long time was basically Aramis's traveling opponent.
Did you get those flipped? I thought Ares was hologram and Aramis was Klon.
I thought I had it right, but I would double check to make sure I am not a complete idiot, which, let's be honest, doesn't really rule it out. No, Klon is going to be Ares, so I had it right. But, I mean, Ares is a fantastic worker. It'll be great to have him in a major promotion full-time. Frankly, he's a guy that should have been signed and used years ago. We knew he was great in, like, 2019 when he was working PWG regularly. And really all left to discuss is, you know, All Out, which is, of course, coming up on the 20th in Toronto. That is the first non-pandemic All Out to not be held in Chicago. But is going to announce so far, we have Jon Moxley versus Darby Allin in a coffin match, which should frankly be fantastic. Moxley's been on a really good run the past few months, much less of a standard kind of just, I'm a cheating heel worker kind of those kind of matches. So I think that's good. Tony Storm will defend the AEW Women's Championship in a four-way against Jamie Hayter, Chris Statlander, and Thekla, which could be a great match, or Thekla, I should say. The Hart Syndicate, including MVP, will be facing Ricochet and the Gates of Agony in a six-man tag. Riho has returned and is challenging Mercedes Moné for the TBS Championship, which she got basically by doing a run-in. And I'm not super enthusiastic about that setup for a match, but, you know. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage will be facing FTR, and we have challenges. Mark Briscoe challenging MJF to an unspecified gimmick match, which I assume will be as violent as possible. And Adam Page has been challenged by Kyle Fletcher, who I assume will be the championship, world championship challenger. That seems like a soft world title match, but I think there's a lot going on this card where I don't think that'll be a major problem. Any thoughts on the announced card or anything on the build up to it that you want to share?
I'm really intrigued by the four-way with Tony Storm. I think that could be really good. I also think it's interesting that she wanted it, which to me says there's a lot of thought put behind what this is going to be. That to me is exciting. This women's division, Fred, is very exciting. I don't think I've ever been higher on this women's division than I am right now. I'm also really, really excited to see Hangman Page, Kyle Fletcher. I think this goes 60 minutes. I think it's a time limit draw because this is an opportunity in Fletcher's first world title match to make a statement. It's also for Hangman Page, he gets to do something different. And you don't want to beat Kyle Fletcher. You don't want to devalue that TNT title. Even though you could make the argument from a kayfabe perspective, well, he's the mid-card title holder. If he loses the world champion in a tough contested match, that's fine. But 60 minutes would be a nice different direction. Hangman Page has already done that once with Bryan Danielson. I think it'd be cool to see Kyle Fletcher be able to do it. He's the ace, or like presumably like the next up ace kind of deal. He's the future of this company. Can you start building him up with a performance like this? I think 60 minutes would be the play here, but even if they don't do 60 and they just do 30, like that match could be incredible. And I like that it's kind of a placeholder world title challenge because he's kind of been involved with the MJF stuff. MJF still has the contract. Mark Briscoe. Like, I think it could work. And I'm really intrigued to see kind of how they set up the rest of the card. I like the Edge Christian FTR stuff. I think it's been good. I also think Christian's been enough of a heel while they've wanted to cheer him to really make it work. FTR's brilliant. Just awesome. Stokely taking the Unprettier a couple weeks ago, I thought was awesome. Like, there is so much with this company that is still good. Also, I want your opinion on this. Is Mox turning babyface? It almost feels like he's starting to show babyface tendencies with Statlander, Daniel Garcia, maybe the Death Riders' lack of success is going to be placed on him, and then he gets replaced. What do you think of that?
I think it's a little early to call it that. I think I'm leaning more towards it being him bringing in Stat and Garcia to the group, possibly leading to like a breakup or split of the group down the road. I think that they definitely have it set up for... I have to think long-term there's going to be a payoff to the early teasing of Wheeler Yuta being very unhappy in the group. But they have kind of really hit the brakes with that. They haven't been playing that up much recently, so I guess maybe they shifted that plan. I just don't get that vibe yet, but I can see where you're coming from, and it wouldn't surprise me if that is something they do in a while. I just don't get that vibe at this current point in time.
It's interesting, though. Showing babyface tendencies isn't a mistake.
I guess we'll see.
There have been so many times where we think they're going to do something and they just don't. I don't know. I'm going to have extra intrigue going into that match.
But I think it'll be an interesting card, and I'm curious to see how they fill it out from here. But I right now, it's looking pretty good on paper. I just don't know that any of the storylines are, fantastic at this point in time. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Fred, I can't wait. I won't be able to watch live because I'll be at a wedding, but I'm very excited to watch it.
I think that's the show this week. Pretty much everything that's been going on with AEW. We'll do another one hopefully later this week to cover this week's Dynamite and see what else is going on in the AEW universe.
It was good to be back, Fred. I think we had some good discussion. I'm so intrigued to see what the streaming plus television numbers look like, because we're not talking HBO Max streaming. We're talking Hulu TV streaming. So I think that's going to make things way more interesting and better discussion points, but it's also going to bring out the worst bad faithers in the world.
Yeah, it always will. Just the dumbest conversations. But that's just part of the world we live in.
Exactly.
Well, I hope you all have a great week, and we'll talk to you hopefully later this week.
5-star review, please and thank you. God bless. Take care. Skull Vikings.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? And are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.